Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And of course, our mission in the podcast is to help you accelerate some of the projects that you're working on and accelerate your own personal and professional development. Our podcast today is actually brought to you by the LEAP program, Leadership Excellence Application Program. This is a feature of our courses, specifically the Frontline Leadership Program, where we do 9 months of continued reinforcement and follow-up. So the LEAP program allows participants to treat learning as a process and not only as an event. I'm excited about our guest today on the podcast. It's someone who I've known for probably 14 years or so since I met this person. So let me tell you a little bit about Albert Kirby Griffin, and we're going to call him Kirby because that's what he goes by. But if you ever need to look him up on LinkedIn, Albert Kirby Griffin. Today we're talking about something essential for any successful organization, developing people. And we have the perfect guest to guide us today, Kirby Griffin. Kirby is the senior manager, talent and learning development at Graphic Packaging International. And he has over 35 years of experience helping organizations achieve real business results through leadership solutions and employee development. From individual contributors all the way up to the C-suite and board of directors, Kirby's worked with them all. He's a creative strategist and a hands-on executor, and I can't wait to see where the conversation takes us. Welcome, Kirby.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, good to see you again.
So, appreciate it.
So Kirby and I did some work together at Graphic Packaging, doing a version of the Frontline Leadership Program back in the day, and then we collaborated on another program. But Kirby, I think that one of the most impressive things I've found about you, besides just your tremendous character, is the journey that you made from being a team member at the Macon Mill, one of the paperboard facilities for Graphic, and where you sit now in your role advising the executive team on talent development.
Thanks, Greg. I started, 35 years ago doing desktop publishing, working at the mill. We were developing SOPs, and that kind of blossomed into some theory training, theory on like how a turbine works or how a recovery boiler works, and did that for the better part of 10 to 15 years. And I had a manager who took a shot on me and said, you know what, I think you would do great facilitating courses. So he got me signed up with The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I learned how to facilitate that course, a couple of other courses in the Franklin Covey Library. And I did that at my location at Macon. I did it for other mills. Started going across Graphic Packaging. And one day somebody here at the corporate office said, you know what, you just need to do this for the company. And that's all you do. So 12 years ago, I came up to our corporate headquarters in Atlanta, continued to facilitate that, worked with Greg on another leadership training program for operational excellence. And in my current role, I am responsible for the talent reviews and succession planning for the organization, as well as executive education and employee development.
Awesome. Well, you know, one thing that stands out just from your story, it's early in your story, you said how one manager took a chance on you. And I think I was listening to another podcast actually just since we talked last, and it said that luck and preparation, right, meet at the crossroads as opportunity is how lucky it is, right, that you had a manager at that time who took that interest in you and suggested that. So I think that's a good takeaway for our listeners today as well. So I'm interested, since you've been part of lots of programs, ours and others, what are some of the insights that you have? I mean, you can reflect on it even from your own successes. What successes, what are the things that contribute to success, do you think, in terms of development, in terms of leadership development? the things that made some programs better, other programs maybe struggle a little bit. What are some of those factors?
I think there are three elements that underpin not only a successful program, but just success as a leader and a manager. The first is a timely response to whatever it is, a training situation, a problem, or an opportunity for your organization. Being there and responding at the earliest possible time is crucial. Secondly, is an accurate solution. Not to go through, let's try this, let's try this, let's try this, but getting an accurate solution as soon as possible. And third is ultimately that solution, it's addressing the training need or the education or even a problem with the organization, but ultimately it adds value to the organization. So I think those three things, being timely, being accurate, and adding value, are just good foundational elements for education as well as being a leader.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, Kirby. This is why I love talking to Kirby, and I try to see him every time I'm in the Atlanta area. Kirby, when you think of your path, I mean, you revealed it through your story. Is there some lessons that you drew either from a particularly successful win or maybe even from a setback? I'm just curious what you reflect on those two directions.
You know, one area that set me back a few times was moving on assumptions rather than testing or validating the assumption. So I would think that I had come up with a solution for a learning need or opportunity in the organization. And instead of talking to a peer about it, instead of maybe getting some consensus among the stakeholders to whom I was delivering the solution to, you know, even maybe going out and getting some empirical evidence to support that, I just pushed it out. I remember one former boss saying that I would just throw stuff over the fence. Mm. And, you know, it was painful. Yeah. to hear that, because, you know, naturally any of us in that situation, we're thinking that we're doing our best work. So I learned to slow down a little bit. And as you know, I could say a couple of times, the fastest way to get somewhere is to go slow, especially in relationships.
I wanted to add to that because you and I shared an experience where we both had that same lesson, actually, is what I was thinking of. And it was just around a program idea that we were launching, and we were kind of under pressure and we were doing what we thought was the right thing. And you're right. And that was a good example where, and that's ultimately what you ended up doing, is you kind of circled back and then it became a much better design.
We got the direction from the main stakeholder.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if we had just gone to them and had said, you know, hey, what do you want in this situation, or what are your thoughts? We would have saved ourselves all of the pain that we went through that night, and even all of the work that we did the night before.
Yeah, for sure. So I appreciate that. Now, I didn't know if you wanted to then flip to one which is maybe the opposite of that, but what's the success that came to mind or the criteria?
You know, I do my worst when I try to take compliments or think about things. So let's go past that one. Maybe okay. I'll think about one coming back.
Well, actually, you said it in your opening story too. So your success is in the, I always say to people, is your success is in the evidence that's accumulated by the things that you've done and how people have recognized you for doing that. You've also, because you're in a manufacturing business and you support a manufacturing business and a marketing business, is I'm curious, you've seen a lot of initiatives come like 5S and Lean and different programs, even, you know, probably big capital projects. And I just wonder if you've made any observations, and maybe it's duplicating what we talked about already, but did you make any observations about the mills or the operations where they did a particularly good job of adopting a new methodology versus one where they didn't?
Well, it goes back to that, interestingly, that you picked up on it, but it's that is slow is fast. So the trouble with Lean Six Sigma is that the desire is to get quick results. And often Lean Six Sigma and the example that I'll share, it just doesn't go that fast. And we as an organization utilized A3 problem solving. It's the, mm-hmm. the Lean Toyota method, the 8-step problem solving process. And, you know, a big part of that is in steps 6, 7, and 8 is to, you know, look at what your countermeasures are doing, review them, tweak them, and then standardize them. And that in terms of the time of an initiative or problem, that takes the most time. But our organization had kind of flipped it in that we wanted to go through those. We wanted to enact the countermeasures as soon as possible and not even see if they were working. And a little bit to my earlier statement about an accurate solution. You know, don't throw stuff up against the wall to see what will stick. Figure out what is right and then go forward with it. Yeah. So I think that is the biggest challenge that an organization can have is that, you know, the your boss, your manager, the plant manager, the people at corporate want this solved immediately, right. Want this fixed, want to keep, you know, keep things running. And sometimes it's not that simple. Sometimes you have to slow down to go fast.
Especially because problems are often more complicated than you initially assess. And there's so many other moving parts that are affecting the thing that you think you're isolating is really not that isolated. You have a unique view, and I know you and I have chatted about this last time we were together in person, is this idea of leadership training, soft skills, and leadership in general, and operating results and operational excellence. And, you know, a lot of times we're still in the topics business. Here's some interesting topics that we think will help people. And, you know, you've been certified in programs that also are very effective programs by themselves, by their design. And then there's the, you know, running of the business. And I'm just curious what your observations are. Is leadership and operating performance sort of meshing together and what relationship you've observed?
Well, think about this. Maybe the right word isn't rarely, but I'll just go ahead and use it. Rarely does a team succeed in spite of its leader. It is often the team, more often, it's the team not succeeding because of the leader, not succeeding because of the direction or the support or the education that a leader is providing them. I know we've all heard the cliche, a team is as strong as its weakest link. Well, sometimes that weakest link is the leader themselves. So there is a proportional symbiotic relationship between leadership and the success of the team. We've all heard and know of those great leaders who we've had either currently or in the past that we would follow anywhere.
Yeah.
And we also know of those leaders that they're providing direction and we're wondering, or at least we're saying to ourselves, that's maybe not the right thing to do. So 100% believe that leadership effectiveness and efficiency impacts the outcome.
Right. So, and one thing I noticed in our interactions, because again, we've known each other for 14 years and we've had different conversations and I would say different levels. One thing I noticed in working with you, not just recently, but say, you know, for the last number of years, is you really are tuned into results or you know how important results are from the business perspective. And you have this unique perspective and seat because you help other leaders evaluate talent in terms of results and development. And I know this wasn't our standard question, but one thing I thought you'd be able to comment on is what do you see as some of the elements that you need in place to do a really good job of elevating the talent of individuals, but also in conjunction with their producing results and whatever the assignment is?
So I think that there are key criteria or elements. There are things that some of us are born with and they're even learnable. But I think resilience is a great one. Being able to collaborate, having learning agility, being able to inspire others. You know, those I think are core elements of a leader that are going to not only allow them to be successful in their own role, but to take roles of greater scale and responsibility. You think and you know that a manager gets their work done through others. Well, as you're able to support your team through the attributes that you have and you continue to succeed and go up the ladder, that getting work done through others just multiplies, right, and continues because you're leading four people, then you're leading 14 people, then you're leading 40 people, then you're leading 400 people. It's not just a 1 + 1 + 1. It exponentially grows.
Right. So I'm not just using, you know, your case, because you and I only talk every once in a while. I know talking with other clients when they're doing succession planning and trying to help, essentially help the executive team move the chess pieces on the board so that, you know, you get to test people out. And I know your company, at least years ago, had, you know, identified some high potentials and some individuals that might be identified for future additional responsibility. I also know that it can be very stressful for high potential individuals when they're so designated, because there's almost this, I can't fail, I can't mess up or else I'm off the fast track. And I just wondered what some of your learnings have been around either identifying people as high potential. Once they're identified as high potential, what are the stresses? What have you noticed?
Well, let's reset the definition of potential, whether it's high or not. Potential is just the ability to get results at the next level.
Right.
And so therefore your high potentials are somebody who you believe have the attributes to do that two or three times higher. But
right.
You know, think of potential as the ability to get results scale and responsibility.
That's a good way of putting it. So go ahead, continue.
I think we had two big learnings in terms of our succession maturing here in our organization. One was that we confused performance and potential. So if somebody wasn't performing, it was assumed that they didn't have potential, when in fact there are other factors that could have led to that non-performance, such as a job mismatch or you know, something like that. The other is that a lot of organizations will put a heck of a lot of people up on the board for succession. So we made the transition of not who could be in that role, and then listing every person who could be in the role,
right,
but who should be in that role.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with the strengths of the employee. And I think that from the C-suite all the way down to a frontline leader, that's another essential attribute of being a good leader, is understanding the strengths of the employees on your team and being able to manage the work using those strengths. You know, not to oversimplify it and use a football analogy, but, you know, the people on the line have different strengths and skills as opposed to the receivers, as opposed to a running back, as opposed to the quarterback.
Right.
So it is crucial for managers to understand what their employees, what their teams are good at, and even so what they're not good at.
Yeah, I think you're right on with that. And I do love how you're focused on performance, again, results, but not without knowing that there's a lot of factors that go into, you know, the performance and the ability to generate results. You know, one of the other questions I have is, you know, you've had the benefit of, well, from your current role, but even back when you were at the mill, is you saw different departments and different levels of collaboration. I just wondered whether you have any insights around, you know, what do you do when different departments have these different KPIs that they're chasing, but technically they're supposed to be working together towards, you know, making the location successful or winning the customer. And I just wondered what you thought about that.
Departments compete, or their priorities compete, because there's a lack of alignment or a shared objective. And, you know, sometimes this can, you mentioned KPIs, sometimes this can manifest itself in a KPI that is set by the department. It's something that they have complete control over, which is a good thing, right? For being a manager to own something, to be responsible for, to have influence over it. But it doesn't add value, or it's not in the shared priority stream or the shared objectives of an organization. And, you know, I wish that I could come up with one off the top of my head. Maybe if I just sit here, for some reason I'm thinking about, all right, I was thinking about a finishing and shipping department, a warehouse. And, you know, let's say that their KPI, you know, was a percentage of rail cars that were clean upon shipping.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was their measurement, and people were focused on it. Well, that doesn't have, I mean, obviously, you know, safety and housekeeping, very, right, very, very important. But how important is that to getting a roll of paper off of the reel and getting it to a converting plant, which is the true goal. So, and sometimes it's going to take a plant manager or an outside party to establish what that shared objective is, or, you know, that priority goal, or that priority, a goal that is a priority for both departments.
Yeah. One thing to follow up with that is, we have another client, and they've been beefing up their corporate, what I guess you'd call centers of excellence or support groups. And so they've hired some really good talent in those areas, and all those groups want to do a good job of adding value to the organization, the operation. And what's happening, though, is, and I know that happened a little bit at Graphic, at least back in the day, is that there's so many groups who want to do good things, help the business get better. But then all those initiatives sometimes funnel down to a plant manager, or production manager, And they have to sort out, well, I'm trying to keep the corporate health and safety group happy with some of the things they're working on. I'm also trying to, you know, make sure the finance group has what they need and the sourcing group and the scheduling group. And it's almost like this bottleneck sometimes that all these groups who want to do the right thing, you know, end up fighting for this very limited resource of a plant manager. And I just didn't know whether you had some insider knowledge of, you know, what does that look like and how do you prevent it?
Well, to flip that back to training, you know, one could say that to make the KPI for training be percentage complete. Mm-hmm. You know, we have done a number instead of, let me finish the play, instead of like a Kirkpatrick four levels where they're actually applying what they learned in the training or even a fifth level of getting better results from what they learned in the training. Right. So, you know, that should become the overall goal for everyone coming in, not just, you know, having a
the trainer. The trainer is not the only one being measured on it. Or the person executing it. It's a collaborative effort is what you're
right.
saying.
So yeah. Our engagement survey, you know, one of the metrics that we have publicized is our participation rate. Mm-hmm. And our participation rate is important in an engagement survey because it measures the amount of people whose voice gets to be heard.
Right.
But it's not the end exactly. in mind. The end in mind becomes what does the employee say and how do you act on it?
Right. Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up because I do have a client that we do that kind of survey for. And you're right. They're fixated on like did 81% of people complete it? And the reality, of course, is that it's not just how many complete it, but what does it tell you from those who are voicing it? Because you could mm-hmm. argue you could survey only 20% and probably get a somewhat decent reading on some predictive reading on what the culture is
exactly.
like. So since we're talking about engagement here for a minute, and you know that one of the things that managers have been wrestling with, I was making the observation the other day that I'm not sure, I think it's waning a little bit, but the whole idea of multi-generational motivation and, you know, the difference between how young people are, I know you have got a young daughter who's in college and, you know, my kids are in their 20s, one my son turned 30, is there is a different, somewhat different attitude towards work, but As I notice that more young people are becoming leaders, I'm not sure it's becoming as big an issue as it was, you know, even 3 to 5 years ago. But I was wondering what your take is on the different, you know, demographics, impact of motivation. Is it all basically hatched by consultants to sell more training and consulting and books? Or is it like what is legit about it and what do you think the ramifications are?
I think there's a very simple answer. But to your point, you know, that revenue stream from consultants are, you know, from people saying, I remember, you know, years ago, these millennials, you know, yeah. I don't get them. And then, you know, it becomes Gen Xers. And it's like every new generation that comes in, it's like, oh, you know, yeah. I don't understand them. And yeah. you know what? Yeah. We don't. It was funny. We were watching a TV show the other night, my wife and I, and we're like, we don't know any of these celebrities. You know, where are we? Okay. All that said, in engagement, common theme here, the manager is going to be the most important person. If you talk to Gallup, for example, they say the manager is the person who has the greatest impact on an employee's engagement. And the steps to get there are very straightforward and simple because different departments, different teams have different cultures and different needs, whether they're of different generations or genders or anything. I think it's as straightforward as this. managers need to listen. They need to, and you know, actively listen to the needs, concerns, what employees say, nod their heads and say thank you, go away, and come back with two things. One is, I heard you say this, this is what we're going to do regarding this. And then, I heard you say this, we can't do anything about this, and this is why.
Yeah.
And you're covering almost all of the bases, whether again, it's age or generation or gender or race or anything else, by the manager actively listening and responding to what employees say and explaining to them why they can't do things. That goes a long way.
Yeah, I love the simplicity and the practicality of what you're suggesting. It also, I think anytime we say we can't because of this, we can't because of that, you know, people are lazy, any of those labels don't really help you take action to do something different. And we notice even when leaders need to make people feel welcome so they don't have as much turnover and they have better retention, they have to really understand, what does it take to make a person feel welcome to a group? And how do you make that person feel connected to that group emotionally so that they want to stay? Because mm-hmm. if it means no difference working for you or working for someone else, then they might decide to choose somewhere else, right? So
exactly.
I love the simplicity of that. You've shared so many good things today. And so, you know, this is my closing when I just start to ask, like, there's probably something I should have asked you that I didn't. And I didn't know if you wanted to share something else with our viewers and listeners.
I mean, you've done such a great job of asking questions. I think the one thing that I see about leaders and leadership, especially in manufacturing, is that, you know, a goodly amount of the leaders were good at what they did and then were promoted into leading people. So their skill set changed from there. And I think the key to making that transition is to realize that leading people is a huge responsibility. I mean, you know, you think about leadership in a community organization or being a parent, or, you know, there's a lot of responsibility.
Right.
And the reward in it is from the doing, is from the leading, is from the day-to-day, the almost hand-to-hand combat that frontline leaders will go through. I mean, it's where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah,
it is the place in an organization where the organization ultimately succeeds or fails.
Yeah.
So it's almost, I dare say, a calling.
Yeah, I was just thinking of the word calling.
to be a leader is a huge responsibility, and it is something that I think the pleasure and reward and benefit. It's always great to hear an attaboy or an attagirl or great job. But I think the success and the reward comes from actually doing it.
Yeah. And I think that's a great way to wrap things up. I think of, you know, the parenting analogy is interesting because you often have no idea how that's all going to turn out. You're not going to get a lot of feedback along the way. If you did it for attaboys and high fives, you're going to be waiting a long time. I think you have to have this sense of satisfaction that says that, yeah, you know what? I think I did a pretty good job and things have turned out pretty well. And yeah. So thank you for that. I was thinking exactly that word, calling, before you said it. So great minds think alike, or or maybe not great minds.
Or
but
at least
I
we
think
do.
We're great. Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to say, Kirby, thank you so much for taking the time. As a working practitioner in this area, it's even more insightful, I think, because you're bringing that value to graphic. And I saw that in how people respond to you internally. That's why I stay in touch with you. You're a person who really espouses a lot of those seven habits and speed of trust elements, right? Character and competence in blend with one another. So thank you, Kirby, for being on the podcast. Remember,
you're welcome,
this is
Greg.
Kirby Griffin. If you want to look him up on LinkedIn, Albert Kirby Griffin. And of course, Graphic Packaging, if you need to buy packaging solutions for your products, graphicpkg.com. Yeah, I noticed that I see the Graphic logo in all the coffee cup lids in the hotels that I stay at. So thank you, Kirby, for taking time with us today.
You're welcome. Sorry for the shameless plug. Take care, Greg.
All right. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of another episode of Accelerating Operational Performance. If you liked it, please like and subscribe. Tell someone else about the podcast. That's how we get better known. And of course, if we can help your organization with its leadership development needs, either at the frontline leader level or at the manager or plant manager level, be sure to reach us at our website at uniquedevelopment.com. And I just want to say, keep doing the good job that you are. Keep working at being a better leader, having a better impact. Whether people give you the high fives or not, you're making a positive difference.